Welcome to the Freedom Fighters Assemble. My name is Kathy Kohlmeyer. You may have heard my name before if you've heard of a landmark case called Hayeswood v. Kohlmeyer, the Supreme Court case that has had a lasting impact on the First Amendment rights of student journalists. My mission is to educate others about the case. In fact, I have an entire foundation dedicated to it called the Kathy Kohlmeyer Foundation. Unique, huh? But this series is brought to you by the Society of Professional Journalists, which, like me, believes that student journalism is a critical component of democracy, and a stronger Fourth Estate starts with all of you. I'm fortunate today to be joined by my co-host, John Tinker. I'm sure most of you are familiar with the landmark case, Tinker v. Des Moines, which John is going to talk briefly about his experience, and also James Labresco, a now freshman in college, but has an experience with censorship as well. So, John, you want to kick us off?
Sure. Thank you, Kathy. My name is John Tinker. I was the lead plaintiff in the 1969 U.S. Supreme Court decision, Tinker v. Des Moines. And in that case, we wore black armbands to protest the war in Vietnam, and the school administration forbid us from doing so, but we did it anyway. And we felt that we had First Amendment rights to freedom of speech. In this case, it was symbolic speech with the wearing of a silent symbol, the black armband. But anyway, we got kicked out of school. We sued in the courts. We followed through the appellate process and ended up at the U.S. Supreme Court, where we won with a 7-2 margin. So that decision established that students and teachers in the United States do not shed their First Amendment rights, essentially, at the schoolhouse gate. So thank you, Kathy, for inviting me to be part of this podcast. I'm glad to be here with James Labresco, and can't wait to hear your story, James, and hear how your case has progressed and what you learned.
So I'm going to give a just brief summary of what happened in my case. So in 1983, I was a learning how to be a journalist in our school, and that meant that we were learning about the Tinker Standard as well as prior restraint. And we had done some digging in our school to find out what was maybe some more relevant stories than just the pretty stories that we generally wrote. And so we came across prior edition of the Spectrum, and it was very relevant, and it had talked about teen problems. And those articles talked about teen pregnancy, divorce, marriage, and to the effect, and they weren't giving the how-tos. It was maybe telling students to stop and think about decisions before you made them and how that could potentially impact others down the road. So midway through our process of all of this, our beloved advisor left. They brought in a substitute that didn't have a journalism background. So then the decision was made to bring in Mr. Emerson, and he was the advisor from Hazelwood Central. And he made the determination, once the paper was ready to go to press, to take it down to Mr. Reynolds, our principal. At that point, prior restraint happened. There were objections to the stories topics, and we were never given the opportunity to make any changes or corrections of what they may have had objection to. And the paper came back that following Monday for us to sell, and it was missing the pages. So long story short, we basically bypassed the board of directors, everything for the school. We didn't go to the administration. We just went to the principal, got his input, and then we bypassed that board and went and talked to the ACLU, and they made the decision that they would like to support us, and it went on. We lost in the Missouri Supreme Court. We won in the appellate court, and then it made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court, where we eventually ended up losing the case in a decision of 5-3. That's kind of where it landed, but unfortunately, it's made a terribly hard for students like James, which I think is a great segue. Today, we're talking to James Labresco, former co-editor of The Theogony, a student newspaper at Alexandria City High School in Alexandria, Virginia. He and his staff won the 2025 Courage in Student Journalism Award from the Student Press Law Center and National Scholastic Press Association for their work creating Voices Unbound, a set of policy recommendations presented to their school board after a new policy threatened students' editorial independence. James is joining us today from Providence, Rhode Island, where he is a freshman at Brown University and a senior staff writer for the Brown Daily Herald. Welcome, James.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks, John. Obviously, you know, both of you are two huge inspirations for me. And fighting the good fight, you know, you showed us how to do it, really set the groundwork for tens of thousands of student journalists. And so you guys are truly, truly incredible inspirations for all of us. I'm so happy and honored to be here. And I can't wait to share some more information about my experiences and try to help other student journalists, giving a few strategies or kind of ways to combat censorship, because you can do it. And do you have people behind you that will really support you?
Absolutely. So, James, in my personal experience with censorship, really it came out that they were basically afraid to think that we were giving students information that wasn't appropriate at the high school level, where in fact that we had students that were pregnant on a daily basis, and at any point there could have been 35 to 40 young ladies pregnant at school. So there was a definite issue. And when we were trying to give just direction of just stop and think about it, the story involving the runaways actually gave hotline numbers where students could call and get help if they were considering running away. And the divorce story just let kids know that there's others that are out there like you. And really the purpose of the articles was to let students know that you're not alone. From that portion of it, John, what do you have that was anything like that? Any more details on yours?
In our case, the school was justifying their suppression of our wearing of the black armbands by saying that they thought it would cause trouble at the school. But I personally felt that the reason they didn't want us to wear the armbands was because they were embarrassed that some of their students would be opposed to the war. And so there's a kind of a dual narrative going on where the school board was presenting a logical reason. They were trying to prevent violence or something like that. But my feeling is there was not really a fear of violence. It was more of an embarrassment. And I'm wondering, James, if what you were thinking about, what the administration was saying regarding their reasons that they didn't want you to publish this. And what were they saying publicly versus what do you think they really thought? Or maybe they were the same, but talk about that for a while, if you would.
Last spring, so spring of 2025, we had started publishing investigative pieces about our school district had launched this new project. They really got behind this model for the high school, which, just for some background context, is the largest high school in Virginia, more than 4,500 students. And so because of that large size, they had decided to split up students at different campuses and have students kind of commute between campuses during the day. And so obviously that caused, you know, problems. These campuses, the two biggest are a half mile apart. Others are like several miles apart. And so it's very logistically difficult to do something like that. And then to prepare for that, they had removed administrators, kind of restructured the administration to fit this new vision, changed a lot of things that students were also unhappy about, things maybe that were less important, like the bell schedule. But a lot of change coming with this high school model. And so all we really did was write about that change, write about the different opinions, people who supported it, people who were against it, and why. After writing those articles and sharing them, they picked up a lot of attention in our city. They became the most read articles in the history of our newspaper, Theogony, which has existed since the 1950s. And so they were really getting tons of attention and, like maybe similar to John's experience, embarrassing the school district a little bit. And so we were told that the school district was doing their standard review of school board policies, and they would be changing our policy. So every article had to get edited and approved by administrators at the school district. They also tried to say that students would lose journalistic privileges. So we would basically face discipline at school if we worked for city newspapers, which is something that I and several other students did, which, I mean, is insane. I don't know of anywhere else where that has happened. Among a slew of other policies that would have completely destroyed any editorial independence that we had. And so, exactly, there's kind of this duality where publicly they're saying, oh no, this is just a standard review, when in fact the policy hadn't been changed since the 1990s. All of a sudden it got changed right when we started writing these investigative stories that were igniting some backlash from the public.
You know, it sounds like there's been a common thread that there was embarrassment in the school. And that was something also in my case that was relevant, is that the community had access to our paper, and our principal really didn't want our community to know that there was pregnant young ladies in our school. So I think that, again, is the common thread within that, but also a band of courage that it takes to want to stand up and talk about what you feel is right also. So I think we're united on that front, which is a great thing. And I think it would be wonderful if we could, through this podcast, maybe encourage other students to not be afraid to stand up and talk about what is relevant to them. So, James, how quickly into this did you start noticing that there were some trouble brewing?
In my very first month of working for Theogony, I think this was in 2022, I had written a story about, in Virginia, our governor had issued a new guidance that would have banned transgender students from using the bathrooms of their choices. And our school district decided not to comply with that guidance. And instead, they were going to keep their current policies, which let people, anyone, use any bathroom that they wanted. I wrote about that. I interviewed an expert who, they told me that basically directly, they said the school district is not complying with this policy. So that was a fact. It wasn't up for debate. And in my headline, I wrote ACPS, my school district, not to comply with the Youngkin administration bathroom policy or something like that. I don't remember the exact verbiage, but not to comply was in there. And then afterward, they called someone from our school district, central administration, called my advisor, essentially intimidated her into removing the headline to change it to something much softer, removing the not to comply language. And she did. And that kind of ignited a major backlash from our staff because we had, for many decades, had our own editorial independence where the staff decided what was published, not the school district. And so we did a class vote. Then we decided to change the headline back to its original form. And we didn't face more backlash from that. But that was kind of our first foray into a situation where our editorial independence is getting kind of taken away. And then in spring of 2024, the PR team came to us with something. They said, now from then on, every interview we conducted, the PR team would have to be present. So maybe even with students, but certainly with teachers, which is ridiculous. I mean, that's like dozens and dozens of things of interviews per week. And it's just logistically impossible. And so we basically told them, no, we're not doing that. We're doing our own thing. And you have no jurisdiction. You can't say that. This is what the current school board policy says. You can't do that. And they said, okay. Well, it's interesting because the school board policy might be put up for review soon. And that was kind of our first hint. Oh, they're going to change it. And then we published these investigative pieces basically directly after that through the summer into the fall of 2024. And then in spring of 2025, they came forward with their policy that would effectively end investigative reporting as we knew it. And that policy, I'll just share, was not passed after massive community backlash. It was tabled. And then a few months ago, they actually passed a policy that basically reverted to the Tinker standard.
I am interested in the control of discourse and how it works in society and who is interested in controlling discourse and how they go about doing it. And that's on one side. And then on the other side is the interest of the democratic whole to have a free discussion and to have the truth actually come out. And it's the PR people that you interacted with, it sounds like they were doing typical PR stuff, which is like controlling the spin and so on, and that being antithetical, really, to what authentic, real journalism is, where you're trying to actually divine the actual root of the truth. How close can you get to the real truth? And so that contest between appearance and the ability to speak the truth, I think, is a real core conflict that we see in society. And I'm just curious what your tactics and strategies and so on, what you think are the best ways to go about dealing with that contest that we have.
Yeah, like you said, for democracy to function, you know, there needs to be a way to access the truth. I think that's something that, in my experience, people recognize. You know, the truth is something that people value, or access to the truth. And so it was about making that very clear. What we were doing was sharing the truth. And what, you know, our school district was doing was trying to block the truth from coming out. In a democracy, it's hard to support people who are blocking the truth from coming out. And so I think kind of viewing it in that sort of way, as journalists, it's our duty to share the goings-on of the world with the general public. And that's we're sharing the truth. That's really our main, our only job. And so to keep that at the forefront, this is a personal opinion, but I really think society in our democracy, in our republic, is always going to value the truth. Because it's, like you said, it's necessary for a republic, a democracy to function.
So, James, question for you. It's a graded class, is that correct, that you're in?
Yeah, so it wasn't established kind of as an outside news group. Originally, it was established as a class to learn and practice journalism.
And leading into that, did you have kind of a precursor class, if you will, that gave you basic fundamentals of, you know, where they would talk about press law, different cases, things like that?
Yeah, we had, they call Journalism 1 is that kind of class, and Journalism 2 is the actual practice of it. And so something we heard a lot from our school board was that, you know, the purpose of these classes is only a curriculum. It's only to kind of apply a curriculum. When that might be the case for Journalism 1, but Journalism 2 is not. It's specifically designed to practice journalism.
And that's exactly what mine was as well. In J1, we learned about how to be a good journalist. We learned the different standards, different case law, and then J2 was putting everything into practice, as you said. So as the tensions are kind of building and the issue is coming about, was it an entire class that joined force, or was it just a portion of you? And once that happened, who did you go to and talk about it? Was there an outside source that you used?
To answer your first question, it was our entire Journalism 2 class, which... Another thing that this kind of dual campus model at my high school did was limit the ability for students to take the electives that they wanted. And so our class had shrunk to only be about 15 people, which was the smallest it had been in many years. And so this was a very tight-knit group of people. We really we worked together on a lot of things. And so we tackled this together. As far as working with other groups, the group that we work with the most was the Student Press Law Center. Starting back more than a year before our case kind of went public, we were working behind the scenes because we, with these tensions rising, we were sensing that something was going to happen and we needed to be prepared. And so we spent about a year between spring 2024 to spring 2025 working with the Student Press Law Center to write a policy that would maintain editorial independence for not only the newspaper, but all student publications at the high school. And we called this, like you mentioned earlier, we called this Voices Unbound. It was modeled on the New Voices laws that the Student Press Law Center has championed across the country. But as well as working with SPLC, we worked with the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, FIRE. We had letters of support coming in from all sorts of organizations, Society of Professional Journalists. Shout out for funding this podcast. So, I mean, if anything, that just shows that people will have your back no matter where you are. around the country or even the world, if you're facing something like this, you know, it's not normal. I'd like to say this because I really found out that it wasn't normal at a conference, at a Student Press Law Center session at a high school journalism conference, where I heard from student journalists in California who had basically the same thing happen to them. Their principal paused publication after they, actually very similar to what you had, Kathy, after they published a story about sex ed. And they kind of showed us like prior restraint, prior review is not normal at all. And so the organizations will be there to back you. There's a network, like you will get support.
James, I was curious, as your class was talking about how to respond to this and what to do, did everybody kind of start out pretty much with a like mind, or did you have to gather a consensus, and how did that go?
It's been a while, so thinking back, I think we also reached out to some former advisors of the class, some involved community members, as well adults as well. Many of them had different opinions. Much of the class had a different opinion. And I worked with my co-editor, Casey Donahue. Shout out to her. We worked together kind of to think about how we were going to balance all these different people's perspectives. And everything was consensus-based with the class. You know, once we presented our ideas to the class, and we didn't move on until everyone agreed. But there were a lot of people who wanted to go right away in spring of 2024, make our case public, go to the press and have our city newspaper write about it. But we really restrained ourselves from doing that for more than a year, because we were working behind the scenes the entire time with our school board to kind of to try to prevent something like this from happening. Going public was our very last case scenario. Eventually, we had to go public.
To me, that sounds very wise, to build your position carefully rather than just flying off the handle. And the consensus part that you talk about, I think that's a really strong way. And it's possible, even with a small group, you can do that. And I think it makes a really strong presentation when you do.
As former high school students, John and myself, we know that these type of pressures, censorship, and standing up for what you believe in can sometimes be a little scary and intimidating. So when you were in your J1 class and you were, I would assume, studying cases like ours, what did you learn from our cases that maybe helped you? Or, you know, you had mentioned earlier when we were talking previously about having heard a portion of my presentation at the J conference. So what did you learn from cases like that that are out there already?
Well, first we learned about Tinker v. Des Moines, John's case, because that was kind of the first foundation. So that case was, it seemed very straightforward to me. I was in a freshman, so ninth grade at the time. I was like, yeah, of course, this is exactly how it should have been ruled. And then when we learned about your case, Kathy, it was kind of like the opposite. I was really confused and kind of questioning our legal system and how this ruling even came to be, because still to this day, it's a little bit puzzling to me. But we did learn that people had done it before, and that it kind of was really nice to have that in the back of my mind. So when something similar happened to us, we had it. People have done it before. It's not just us. Like, there are people out here who have set the groundwork. And so it made it a lot easier, at least mentally and psychologically, to take on the fight, to not listen to those who said, oh, just shut up and listen to your administrators. Just do what they say. We, knowing that history was there, allowed us to know that, like, administrators are not always in the right. And, you know, it's really our duty and our role to try to protect our speech.
Having been through this, you know, John and I, and now you, James, I can say, looking back at this myself, this, my case landing in Supreme Court was never something that was the long-term goal. It was really just to publish the articles. So looking at it at this point, I know, looking back, for me, one thing I would take away would have been learning to look at the bigger long-term picture and who is best representing me. So looking at that from both of your perspectives now, what do you wish you knew before any of this happened?
In my case, it was Like the school was arguing that our black armbands were going to cause a disruption to the educational process, basically. So what I learned was that the students are actually more tolerant than the adults, as in my case, in our case anyway. The students were pretty much, well, actually, the broad majority of them were just apathetic about it. I mean, they just didn't care. And the ones that did care, only a very few of them made a scene about it. The adults, I think, were nervous and fearful about what would happen next. But I think the students were pretty much chill, as they say, and down. You know, it was not a problem for the students. Like Kathy, like you said, Kathy, that you just wanted to publish that article. With us, we just wanted to protest the war. We were not trying to create a Supreme Court case out of it. I think everything went basically right. Everything went okay with our case. There were no major mess-ups or, you know, people say, what would you make different? And I hesitate to say anything at all because it came out right. So why would I want to change any part of it? But I don't know. I wish I would have known earlier that it's really the adults that get nervous, not the kids, I guess.
Agreed. That's a good point. James, anything on your side?
I'm not sure if I would have necessarily done anything different, but I wish that I had known from the beginning that our community and even bigger than our immediate community, you know, people from all over the country would have our backs, and that we would feel really supported, because it was a worry before we kind of hit publish on our editorial talking about what had happened and went to the local media and did all these kinds of things. It was a worry we had that maybe they would tell us that our administrators were right. And like deep down, we knew that wouldn't be the case. But of course, when you're in something like that, you always have that self-doubt. And so just having full confidence that we were right, that we knew that like our right to speak and our right to publish what we knew was the truth, that was ultimately something that other people could not change our minds about. Yeah. So just having that confidence all the way through, especially in the beginning, I would do that maybe a little bit differently. But in terms of like our actual actions, I don't think I would really have changed anything.
What's the single best piece of advice you'd give student journalists who want or need to approach the school board for this kind of thing? For me, I would just recommend standing up for what you believe in, because if we're not using our voices, we're losing them. And it doesn't have to be something that will land you all the way in the Supreme Court, but it just means having the courage to stand up for what you believe in and sharing that with somebody else, because I would bet you there's others that would be united on that same front, that they maybe feel the same thing about something, and together, working together on things is one great way to make a difference. So, John, what's a quick piece of advice you'd have?
My standard advice to students is to know your argument, know what you're talking about. Treat your adversary as people, as a person. Find the humanity in your adversary. In today's world, I would advise students to take it seriously. Know your principles, know your own values, and trust the truth, trust the wisdom of the ages regarding the truth and the value of the truth, and maybe even the inevitability of justice and so on down the road. But keep the faith, I guess, is a one-liner that covers a lot of territory. Keep the faith. We can have a democratic society if we work on it, I think, is my belief. And so I encourage the students of today to work toward that and to believe in it, that we can attain it, and then to go forward.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I would add, there's no injustice too small when it comes to free speech and many other things as well. But don't think that something is too small to be important or too small to make a fight about, because if anything, it'll always get bigger as time goes on. if you notice something and you know to yourself, like, that's not right, trust that feeling. And then I'll also say, like John said, to be prepared and do your research. Take time. Don't jump the gun. Go very, very slowly when doing something like this. And try as much as you can to work with the people who are inflicting this kind of thing on you. Try to work with them as much as you can. And then if that doesn't work, then that's when you start reaching out to other organizations. And don't hesitate to do that. Student Press Law Center, they're incredible. They will respond to you. They will give you great advice. And if anyone, you know, reach out to other student journalists who have been through it, reach out. Kathy helped us out in our case. She had like a letter to our school board and stuff. I'm sure John would be happy to help as well if there's a situation going on. And I'm always happy to help. There is a network. There are people who will support you. You just have to go find them. And yeah, keep fighting the good fight.
So was there ever a point for any of you where you got to the point of, I don't want to do this anymore?
I went out the door preparing to wear the armband, and my dad, he wasn't so sure I should do that. And I asked him why. And he said, well, the school authorities, they have a job to do, and they have decided that the armbands would be a problem for the school. So maybe you should respect their decision and so on. And I said, well, Dad, this is just a piece of cloth, and we're talking about the war. In Vietnam, people are dying every day. And he said, my dad said to me, he said, well, then for you, it's a matter of conscience. I said, well, I guess it is. You know, he says, well, then I support you. My father had, you know, opposed the Nazis in World War II and understood the nature of Nazism in a society, and that the whole society has to have a conscience. We have to obey our conscience. And anyway, that gave me a feeling of security. I don't know, James, did you have sources of support, like personal support?
Yeah, my parents played a similar role. One of my first articles where the headline was changed. We talked about that. I talked to my parents about that afterward. And so they knew everything that was going on throughout this entire timeline. And so by the time we got to spring of 2025, when we really started fighting our school board on this, they were there and they had my back completely. And I did doubt, though. You know, I met with a school board member consistently over between 2024 and 2025 many times to discuss this. And they kind of told me, like, we are going to do it right. And don't make this a fight, make this a conversation. And so at the last second, when I kind of felt betrayed almost in a way when this new policy had come out, and I felt like the only way I could move forward was to make it a fight, I called them. And I talked to them about it, and they basically said, don't do something you'll regret. And I really had to think about that. But then, you know, talking back to the newsroom, no one else was that kind of unsure about it. Everyone else really wanted to go for it. And I talked to some very moderate advisors that I've had. And they also were in full support. So I thought, okay, you know what? To hell with it. And we just did it.
So last question. From all of our experiences, what lessons have you learned and how is it impacting what you're doing now? John, you want to go first?
The lesson I would say I learned was to take courage. And sometimes things work out. And to not be afraid and to go directly at what you want and see what holds you back. If you want to know what's holding you back, go toward what you want. And we wanted to talk about the war in Vietnam, so we wore our armbands. But things can work out right. Plan and be thoughtful about what you do, and it can work out.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. At the school board meeting where kind of our whole group came up, many members of the community, 20 community members came to speak. You know, we were all holding signs in the audience And our student representatives on the school board, I won't forget this, like, they had so much courage. They stood up in the middle of the school board meeting, and this is kind of our way to pay homage to you, John, but they put on black armbands, and they said, we're not going to stand for this.
Love it.
And that was just a beautiful moment, and just knowing that, like, I learned that not only does something like this kind of try to correct something that's wrong, but it can also bring people together in major ways. And so the number of people I've spoken with around the country, I'm sure you guys have many more, but, you know, it creates a community. That is something that's just so beautiful.
That's awesome. James, the only reason that we've spoken to more is because we're much older. You have a long ways to go to share your story.
Oh, no, but still welcome to the club, James. We're
absolutely. Very proud of you.
Truly so honored to be on this podcast with you, too.
I would like to thank both of you from the bottom of my heart for being with us today.
Thank you, Kathy. Good to meet you, James.
Yeah, thank you. So nice to be on with you too.
And also, again, thank you to the Society of Professional Journalists Foundation for funding this and understanding the importance of a free student press. Please see our site for downloads and the curriculum materials again. And I hope to have and hear back from you next month for our next hot topic, because you won't want to miss it.